can help to make a good situation in the housing market better, as opposed to some of the harder hit states that are just trying to make a very bad situation a little less bad.
Millions in federal dollars will help blunt foreclosures in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 30th of December. Good evening, I'm Duncan Moon. Also tonight, assessing the gang problem in Anchorage.
Our goal was to take the worst offenders off the streets, and that's exactly what happened.
Those stories and much more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Grant Station, finding grants for nonprofit organizations, schools, and governmental agencies throughout the U.S. and Canada. Grant Station, fast track to funding. On the web at grantstation.com.
The Alaska Giving Coalition announces Pick, Click, Give, a whole new way to reach out and help Alaskans when you apply for your PFD online. Share part of your dividend with some of your favorite Alaska nonprofits. It's a chance for all of us to come together and give a little extra. Remember, when you apply for your PFD online, just pick, click, give. Information online at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Giving Coalition.
The Trans-Alaska oil pipeline has reopened after an overnight shutdown, and tankers began taking on oil at the Valdez tanker dock after the weather calmed down mid-morning. Operators stopped pumps along the 800-mile pipeline at 8 p.m., The line was reopened at 2 a.m., but transferring oil to the two tankers berthed in Valdez had to wait until later in the morning. Alaska has received nearly $20 million in federal funds to help neighborhoods where foreclosures and declining home values are a problem. The money is part of the Housing and Economic Recovery Act, passed by Congress and signed by President Bush this past summer. Lee Jones is a spokesperson for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. He says the program provides nearly $4 billion for communities facing high foreclosure rates in every state.
You either move quickly to deal with properties that are at risk of going bad, or you allow those properties to go bad. And if you allow those properties to go bad, the neighborhoods around them will go bad too, and so will the larger city in which those neighborhoods are located if you don't do something about it.
Alaska has the lowest foreclosure rate in the nation, so the state is receiving the minimum amount allowed under the new law. Jones says the hardest-hit states will get $500 million to tackle the problem.
If you look at Nevada or you look at California, what you see are just communities that have essentially been overwhelmed, whether Las Vegas, Nevada, or Stockton, California, or Elyria, Ohio. Those communities have just been overwhelmed by foreclosures.
The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation will distribute the money. Brian Butcher is Public Affairs Director for the organization. He says Alaska's foreclosure rate has increased in the past few years, but is still in the normal range, below even where it was earlier this decade. He says that puts the state in a unique position as it decides how to use the funds.
So we're in a fortunate situation where we can help to make a good situation in the housing market better, as opposed to some of the harder hit states that are just trying to make a very bad situation a little less bad.
The money can be used to help local governments buy abandoned properties and get them ready for sale. Butcher says most of the money will go to urban Alaska.
What pockets of problems that we have been in South Central and the Mat-Su Valley and Anchorage. So the majority of the money is in urban Alaska, specifically in the Anchorage-Mat-Su area, with very little being out in rural Alaska, which hasn't had even the small problem that we've seen in South Central.
The federal government is requiring states to use the money within 18 months. Butcher says that timeline will be one hurdle for Alaska, where the foreclosure problem isn't very noticeable.
Well, in hard-hit states, 18 months is, you know, they've got their pick of areas to put the funding into. In our case, it's going to be much more of a challenge because we don't have a lot of blighted, abandoned properties, and we don't have a tremendous number of foreclosed homes. So it's going to take a lot more work to kind of find and then target ways that this money can be beneficial to the state.
Starting next month, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation will distribute the money to nonprofits and local governments who come up with appropriate spending plans. Alaska was one of the first states approved for the program. G gang violence has tapered off in Anchorage in recent months, but those who are fighting gang violence are not letting up. On Monday, the Triborough Anti-Gang and Youth Violence Policy Team issued a report of its successes, along with a battle plan for the future. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
In November 2006, the mayors of the Kenai Peninsula and the Matanuska-Susitna boroughs decided to join forces with the municipality of Anchorage in the fight against youth and gang-related violence. Yesterday, Anchorage Mayor Mark Bakich described the effectiveness of the partnership's first phase.
A great ending to 2 years of work with the Triborough Anti-Gang and Youth Violence Policy Team, and to celebrate the beginning of an even broader community partnership.
Monday's City Hall gathering featured the signing of a Memorandum of Understanding promising future cooperation. It included not only the elected heads of the three local governments, but a host of counseling offices, support agencies, and various nonprofits, faith-based groups, educational and police representatives, along with state and federal prosecutors. Mayor Bakich described past federal successes.
Working with the federal team, the municipal prosecutors have obtained 81 indictments, 48 convictions, and a total time behind bars for those defendants of more than 325 years.
For gang members to slide into the federal system, the defendants must be over 18 and accused of crimes involving either drugs or guns. Anchorage Police Chief Rob Hune said once those cases enter the federal system, the accused are effectively removed from the streets.
They're not getting out on bail while they're awaiting their federal court date, and then they're put away in federal penitentiaries. So they're not back for a while, and that gives us a jump start on dealing with the law enforcement entity. It gives a little breathing room to the folks who are dealing with the prevention and the intervention.
Hune observed a jailed gang member can no longer serve as a mentor to at-risk youth. The arrests do not mean the gang member numbers in Anchorage have dropped. After the signing, Hune said APD has listed about 240 confirmed members with about 1,000 possible associates. That's more than in previous reports. Hune says that could be partially due to better intelligence gathering. The APD chief said suppression, arrests, is only one of three ways to fight youth gangs and violence. In some ways, it's the least attractive.
The suppression piece is always more expensive in costs of time spent, dollars spent, but also in the emotional cost of the people involved who are victimized by it.
Intervention and prevention also figured in the approximately 50-page report, which noted over the last 2 years, over 3,300 youth were linked with adult mentors. Nearly 6,500 took part in after-school programs, over 16,000 participated in life skills learning, and youth contributed over 43,000 hours of community services. A key part of the Memorandum of Understanding signed Monday was increased intervention and prevention. Most are spearheaded by the 40-member groups of Anchorage United for Youth. Tom Bakich works for the organization. He says many of the intervention proposals will use existing resources.
The thing to remember about this whole plan into both the prevention and the intervention areas is a lot of this is not just new resources, it's redeployment of resources.
He says beyond reassigning existing resources, the group would seek other ways to minimize the cost to the municipality.
Greg Razzle is here from Cooking at Region Inc., and he and other members of the policy team have stepped forward to help us lead our efforts into the community over the next few months to try to draw other resources in from our private sector so that we can make this a very cost-effective and a very meaningful opportunity for all our youth, but one that is also not going to cost the taxpayer a whole lot of money.
Mayor David Carey of the Kenai Peninsula Borough underscored the need for a regional approach and an increased emphasis upon intervention.
For each one of our students that come up here to Anchorage and possibly are involved in an environment that's unhealthy, we want to prevent that. And we certainly want to be sure that when they come back that we also have the different preventive methods available to us.
The report on gang and youth violence will become available to the public in the near future, who will then get a chance to comment at various January meetings. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a study looks at the fate of Alaska's polar bears.
There's just not enough energy on land in many parts of the Arctic to support significant populations of large carnivores or omnivores.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve.
The Alaska Giving Coalition announces Pick, Click, Give, a whole new way to reach out and help Alaskans when you apply for your PFD online. Share part of your dividend with some of your favorite Alaska nonprofits. It's a chance for all of us to come together and give a little extra. Remember, when you apply for your PFD online, just pick, click, give. Information online at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Giving Coalition.
Tomorrow is the deadline for seniors to sign up for prescription drug benefits from Medicare. Under the system set up by Congress, anyone over 65 who has worked for 10 years or more in a covered job is eligible to sign up for a private sector insurance program that is partially subsidized by the federal government. Medicare Regional Director John Hammerlin in Seattle says there are quite a few to choose from.
I'm pretty convinced that with 45 plans available to citizens of Alaska, there's probably at least one plan that's going to meet all of their needs.
Medicare has an interactive website to help sort through those 45 options, and those who have already signed up for a program may want to take a second look while the window to change plans is still open.
Premiums went up for most of the plans this year across the country. The coverage levels changed in certain instances. And so we asked that people do a little bit of analysis to make sure that the plan they have continues to be the right one. And as I said, we have great tools available to help them do that analysis.
The state government also has volunteers available to help people navigate through the details. Hammerlin says some seniors may have existing prescription drug coverage that is better than anything in the Medicare options, but it might be worth checking. And those who regularly use specific drugs should make sure their drugs are specifically covered in any benefit plan they sign up for.
We just want to make sure that people do their homework, do their due diligence, so that the coverage that they get really meets all of their needs. Certainly, first and foremost, their health needs, but also, does it fit their pocketbook? Does it fit their convenience? And the other thing people have to consider is the formulary, the list of drugs covered by any plan. Are the drugs that they need or that they anticipate needing during the year on that formulary?
There's more information at the Medicare website, medicare.gov. New research is providing a unique glimpse into how polar bears in Alaska cope on land when the sea ice retreats. Biologists tracked the movements of more than a dozen bears this fall on the North Slope. There was a lot of variation in how the bears appeared to fare during the second lowest Arctic ice extent on record. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife biologist Eric Regeer is one of the few people on the planet who's actually weighed a polar bear. The job requires a tripod and a chain hoist. On the North Slope late this summer, Regeer also measured the length and girth of several bears and gathered other important samples.
We collect breath from the bear in a bag, which can help us determine what the bear has been eating. We collect hair from the bear, blood samples. We take fat samples, which can be used to look for contaminants.
The information will help scientists learn what happens to polar bears when shrinking sea ice forces them to spend more time on land. They prefer life out on the ice, where they have easy access to a meal packed with blubber.
Seals, sometimes you see them out there sitting on the ice, they look like big kind of a fat M&Ms. You know, they're a very, very energetically rich food source.
2007 was a record for sea ice loss in the Arctic, with 2008 a close second. The summer sea ice retreated far beyond the nutrient-rich waters of the continental shelf where seals live. Alaska's polar bears have had to choose between riding the sea ice too far north or staying on land. Regeer says, in general, they have a hard time finding enough food when they aren't on the ice.
There's just not enough energy on land in many parts of the Arctic to support significant populations of large carnivores or omnivores. So for polar bears to make it on land, they need to outcompete these animals that are very well adapted to that environment and that already exist there, and that's the grizzly bears.
The University of Wyoming is leading the current study. In August, Regeer and several colleagues captured 13 polar bears near Prudhoe Bay. After gathering samples, they outfitted the bears with satellite tracking tags. 2 months later, they were able to recapture six of the bears to find out how they were doing. Regeer says one female had lost 100 pounds, or nearly a quarter of her body weight.
And that bear, shortly after capture, headed straight north about 500 kilometers to the edge of the multi-year pack ice. And a lot of that trip was done by swimming. Some of it was done by riding on smaller ice floes. And so this is a bear that went about 500 kilometers to the north and then came almost all the way back down by October.
But not all the bears got thinner. Several bears the biologists followed moved east to Kaktovik, where scraps from the fall bowhead whale hunt provided plenty of calories.
This year there was between 30 and 40 at various times polar bears in proximity to the village of Kaktovik, presumably to take advantage of the remains of those whale carcasses. And so, indeed, some of the bears in this study did hang around those whale carcasses and apparently eat a lot of whale meat and fat over the summer.
Regeer says whale meat can't sustain enough polar bears to help the population long term, but it is likely to bring more bears in close contact with humans in the coming years. Regeer says there isn't any scientific evidence for an increase in polar bear traffic onshore yet in Alaska, but it does seem to be a trend in other parts of the Arctic.
We've seen in recent years that as the sea ice declines, you have more bears on land, those bears appear to be hungrier, and they're coming around human settlements more, presumably looking for food. So the potential for increased human-bear conflicts as the summer periods get longer in the Arctic is a conservation concern for polar bears.
Previous studies show that two-thirds of the world's polar bear population could be gone by the middle of this century. And Regeer says Alaska's bears are facing the most serious threat because the ice retreat here is expected to be the most dramatic.
And what we found is that in bad ice years with long summers and big ice retreats, survival is markedly lower for polar bears. Now, if you look at climate models and project out in the next 50 or 100 years, what the sea ice is likely to look like off the north coast of Alaska, you combine that with what we know, how we know the sea ice affects survival rates and reproductive rates, and the picture starts to look pretty grim.
The next phase of the current study will take place next summer. The biologists will be based on an icebreaker in the Arctic Ocean so they can research how the bears are coping in that environment. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Six students from Haines will get the rare opportunity to see firsthand how Alaskan issues are handled at the federal judicial level. From member station KHNS, John Hunt reports.
The Haines debate team has been offered reserved seats as the Supreme Court hears arguments on the Kensington Mines tailings plants and how they may be affected by the Clean Water Act. The debate team coach is Gershon Cohen.
We leave on January 9th, and the Supreme Court hearing is on the 12th. And on the 15th, we will come back from D.C. and land in Ketchikan just in time to make the drama debate tournament.
Cohen talked about the basics of the case that the team will witness.
It is a hearing on the Waters of the United States case that has to do with the Kensington mine and whether or not it is legal to discharge mine waste into Waters of the United States, in this case, a lake. And there are two sides to the issue, and one side says it's okay, and the other side says it's not okay. And I guess the U.S. Supreme Court's going to tell us which it is.
Those two sides are probably very familiar to the debate team members. One side of the issue is representing Core Alaska, a division of Coeur d'Alene Mines Corporation, and supported by the state of Alaska. The other side is Haines' own Lynn Canal Conservation, Juneau's chapter of the Sierra Club, and the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. The six students and four adults are paying their own way to attend the session in Washington, D.C. Once the team decided to go, Cohen said getting seats was the next hurdle.
There are very few seats at the Supreme Court chambers. It is traditional at this point that if you want to go and hear the Supreme Court listen to a case, you have to show up on the sidewalk at 2 o'clock in the morning with a sleeping bag, and you have to wait in line, and then hopefully when the doors open up at 8:30, you're far enough forward in the line and there are enough seats available that you can get in.
Cohen said the team was was prepared to camp out, but he began making telephone calls and then was in the D.C. area recently for a meeting.
To make a long story short, I ran into a friend at one of these meetings and someone else was listening to our conversation. That person said, gee, here's somebody that you should try to call. And one step led to the next. And the next thing I knew, I was getting a phone call from the counselor to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And he was telling me that he would be happy to help the Haynes High School debate team attend this hearing and that they were going to set aside enough seats for us all to go.
Cohen spoke with Jeff Miniar, the personal counselor for Chief Justice John Roberts.
And then at the end of the conversation, the counselor to the Chief Justice offered to take us on a tour of the building if we wanted to go at the end. And that was very nice. And I have a feeling we'll probably take him up on that.
The Supreme Court is scheduled to hear the arguments on Monday, January 12th, between 10 and 11 a.m. Reporting in Haynes, I'm John Hunt.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the Alaska Community Foundation, encouraging listeners to tune into AK every weekend. Your local public radio station has airtime.
On January 3, 1959, President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed Alaska's statehood proclamation.
Remarks of the President on signing the proclamation admitting Alaska into the State of the Union and the executive order designating the new design for the United States flag. Cabinet room in the White House, January 3, 1959.
Gentlemen, I think that all of us recognize it as an historic occasion, certainly for myself. I feel very highly privileged and honored to welcome the 49th state into the Union. Such a ceremony has not taken place in almost half a century, so at least I have the feeling of self-gratification that I'm just not one of a group on this kind of a ceremony. And I, to the state itself, to its people, I extend on behalf of all their sister states their best wishes, their hopes for prosperity and success, and to each of you gentlemen elected to high office now to represent your new state in both the state and federal offices, my congratulations, my felicitations, and my hope that we will all work together to the benefit of all 49 states. And certainly I pledge to you my cooperation in that effort. Now, so far as these pens are concerned, I hope there's one for each of you people who have worked so hard to bring about this this thing, and I think that one of you should be Mr. Steger. And Dick, and I think this will reach around here. Let me present them to them. Johnson?
The ceremony was the culmination of Alaska's struggle to become the 49th state. Anchorage is celebrating the 50th anniversary of that day with a long list of events this weekend. Darrell Schaff has the job of planning and coordinating all those activities. He's at the Denona Convention Center right now making preparations.
Yes.
What are you doing right now?
Right now we're setting up for the January 2nd gala dinner, which is the sort of VIP formal, let's get dressed up and celebrate the 50th anniversary with the pomp and circumstance and VIPs from all over the world and that kind of an evening.
And how are all the, in general, how are the preparations going along? What still needs to be done?
Well, they're going well. Fortunately, we've been able to cooperate very nicely with the Denona Center to have some extra time. We have about 300 performers who will be on stage during the course of the gala. And so just creating the stage for that was pretty amazing. We've created the largest stage, I'm sure, that ever existed in Alaska.
So that's your first event on Friday. What happens next on Saturday?
Saturday is really the day of statehood, and there's several really important things that are happening. And the one piece I want to make sure I say is that everything on Saturday is free to the public, because we wanted that to be a really important, inclusive kind of day. At 4 o'clock, or approximately 4 o'clock, as the sun's going down, 3:30, we'll have a light parade that goes down F Street. And the light parade is made up of delegates from all over the state of Alaska, people from villages and towns and cities who've come here at our request and are taking part in a show of unity. They're coming here to collectively light a torch, quite an amazing 14-foot stainless steel piece that is will be installed in front of the Dena'ina Center. And they're going to light that around 4 o'clock as a symbol of the unity of these people and the unity of Alaska moving into the next 50 years. From 4 o'clock until 8 o'clock, it's incredible. We have the three theaters of the Performing Arts Center. We have both levels at the Egan, both levels at the Dena'ina. And we've hired probably close to 400 of the top entertainers all over Alaska to come here and perform for free in all of those venues. We have bands for people who want to dance. We have spoken word. We have ethnic groups. We have just about everything you can possibly imagine. And it goes on until 8 o'clock. And at that point, we invite the public to come back outside and watch probably the largest fireworks display that's been done in Alaska.
Well, it sounds like you've got a lot of people coming in. Although it's all happening in Anchorage, it's truly a statewide celebration.
We were asked by the state to host this particular date. Fairbanks had a date that they hosted. Juneau had a date that they hosted. And all of that's leading up to this big day of statehood. And so we're really hosting the entire state here. And I'm happy to say that we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people coming from all over the state and from all over the world to be part of this historic moment.
What activity or event are you most looking forward to, Darl?
The 4th.
Your job will be done.
My first day off in over a year. No, I think the fireworks are going to be very exciting. But I'm also very excited about the lighting of the cauldron.
How many people do you expect to attend?
Well, on Saturday, we're hoping that the turnout is just remarkable because everyone has something to celebrate. And the fact that it's going to be cold just means that we're in Alaska and it's January. We're hoping for thousands and thousands of people. But we set it up downtown so the fewest number of streets are closed, the maximum number of parking spaces are available, and all the parking garages are open. So I think people can come down, really enjoy it. And doing it during the day also means that all of the stores are open downtown, the restaurants and things. So people can slip in and get a cup of coffee and have a little economic impact too, which we think is very important.
Darl Shoff is in charge of planning and coordinating this weekend's 50th anniversary of statehood celebrations in Anchorage. Darl, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from John Hunt in Haines and Len Anderson in Anchorage. APRN's Steve Heimel reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. And I'm Duncan Moon. From all of us here at the Alaska Public Radio Network, have a good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Rasmussen Foundation, partnering with Alaska's nonprofits and people to improve the quality of life throughout our state. Learn more at rasmussen.org.
And by
BP Alaska. BP is focused on the future, getting more oil out of Prudhoe Bay and bringing Alaska's gas to North America.
Alaska Statehood Day celebration starts on Friday, January 2nd, with a grand commemorative statehood gala and dinner at the Dena'ina Center. For reservations and tickets, visit AlaskaTurns50.com. The free festivities are Saturday, January 3rd, starting at 3 p.m., featuring a parade of delegates from across Alaska in downtown Anchorage, entertainment at the Dena'ina and Egan Convention Centers, and the Performing Arts Center. Details at AlaskaTurns50.com. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Statehood Celebration Committee.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.